We're looking at a good Bible story this morning, and Daniel's got to be one of our favorite characters in the Bible, and think about him in the lion's den. When we get to the part about Daniel in the lion's den, though, you need to think about an old man. He's in his 80s by the time he gets thrown in the lion's den. And it took me a long time to realize or to figure out that that was the case, that he was that old at that point in his life. But Daniel spent a long life of service, and in virtually all of his life was a long way from God, at least geographically. He was in bondage in Babylon and separated from God's people and the temple and all those things. And yet Daniel is a great character of faith and also an example in spiritual integrity. And that's what I'd like for us to talk about this morning, is spiritual integrity. And I hope that we can appreciate what Daniel was and the example that he gives us, and maybe we can be encouraged to do the same kind of thing that Daniel did. I want to begin this hour by looking at the word integrity. It's not an easy word to define, because there's a depth to it. We think about a person of integrity, that's somebody who tells the truth, but it's bigger than that, it's more than that. When you look at the definition, there is certainly honesty, and I'm not sure why I've got mailboxes on there, that font. But anyway, when you look at integrity, honesty is certainly a part of it, telling the truth. And a person of integrity is going to be somebody who's honest or tells the truth. But more than that, the word integrity means an unimpaired state or soundness or solid. The idea of being undivided or an unbroken state, completeness. And synonyms for integrity are fidelity or justice, virtue, and worth. Well, that's highfalutin and complicated, maybe. Maybe not for you. But anyway, when we look at that idea of an unimpaired state, solid and sound, we can illustrate it this way. About a week ago and before that, there were a lot of chocolate rabbits for sale. And as you look at the stores and you see, you know that there's basically two kinds of chocolate rabbits. They're the ones that are solid. And then there are the chocolate rabbits that are hollow. And when you look at them from the outside, you don't know which is which. You can't tell one from the other. And there's this appearance of chocolate and all the chocolate that you're going to get when you bite into that rabbit's ears. And then the disappointment comes when you realize that inside is hollow. It's just air inside there. That is not a rabbit of integrity. A rabbit of integrity, what you see on the outside, that's what it is all the way through. That is sound or solid. The idea of unbroken state or completeness. I moved away from Moundsville in 95. About 2 years before that, down in New Martinsville, I saw a car caught my attention. It was a 1969 Mercury Monterey. It was a two-door, I should say it was an 18-foot two-door car. It just had a very impressive look to it. Just beautiful. And I decided I was going to buy that. And that was really a very foolish thing to do. But anyway, it was just so beautiful. I thought, guys, it's just me and my little boys are out. And in a moment of weakness, I made a decision. We had a lot of fun taking that beautiful car to car shows. But there was a problem. And, of course, that's why it was so cheap. The exhaust manifold was cracked. And, of course, it took me a little while to realize that. And so that car was not a car of integrity. It looked good, but there was this little crap that became a huge problem. You couldn't buy a new one. You couldn't buy a used exhaust manifold. And I finally found somebody that had special welding talents that could fix it that way. But it took me about 4 months to get that, and really way too much time and money. But a little disappointment there. Of course, it had some Bondo in it, and you know what Bondo is. And that is when you repair the rust, you cut it out, and you put the nice paint over the net, it looks real good. Of course, you go around with a magnet, and you can figure out where the Bondo is on a very beautiful car. And all of those things are suggesting that what you see on the surface is not really what's there. There is this appearance of beauty or solidness, this appearance of one thing, and the reality is really something else. And what we want in our character and what we want spiritually is to develop ourselves as people or characters of integrity. And that's what we're going to find in Daniel as we look at the story of Daniel and the book of Daniel. And the story starts really in chapter 1. Daniel was brought to the city of Babylon as a slave, along with a lot of other Israelites that were taken into captivity. You know, the northern kingdom was taken by the Assyrians years before, and now the southern kingdom, Judah, had been unfaithful to the Lord. Now they were taken into Babylonian captivity for their immorality and their idolatry, the fact that they departed from the Lord, and God had promised through the prophets that this judgment was coming. Not everybody in Israel, not everybody in Judah was wicked. Certainly Daniel and his friends and others, no doubt, Ezekiel, for example, there were faithful individuals, but the nation as a whole was wicked and were taken into captivity. And we've got these individuals, particularly Daniel and his friends in this book, that were taken to Babylon as slaves. And we know that they were people of faith, that they were loyal individuals that were brought to the city of Babylon. When they were brought there, they were chosen as a part of a select group. And Nebuchadnezzar gave the instruction that they were to look for young men in whom, verse 4 of chapter 1, was no blemish, good-looking, gifted in wisdom, and possessing knowledge, quick to understand, ability to serve in the king's palace. He wanted these qualified servants, these slaves, to work in the king's palace. And so Daniel and his friends were among the group that were pulled out for that special training. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. It's interesting that we remember Daniel's Hebrew name, but we remember his friends' Babylonian names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We forget Daniel's Babylonian name. I'm not sure why that is, that we take Hebrew and... But anyway, we know Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and we remember Daniel, the more significant character in the book. And part of their training was to be in the diet they would eat. You remember how that they were supposed to eat from the king's table and his food. And Daniel, the text says in verse 8, purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's drink, his wine and the food that the king ate and then served these special servants. It was supposed to be a special privilege to eat these things, but because they were foods that would defile, obviously they would be unclean. It would be in violation of the law that Daniel had grown up with as a boy. And he wouldn't eat those things, even in this foreign environment and under the pressure of this man that was put in charge of them and their training. Well, God brought Daniel into the good favor of this chief of the eunuchs. And he listened to Daniel, and Daniel had suggested, you let us eat the vegetables and the things that we're accustomed to eating and drink water, and if in 10 days we are not healthy and of good appearance, then we'll gladly go ahead and eat what you want us to eat. But let us be tested in this way. And God blessed them, and certainly their appearance was great, and he consented and found that God gave them knowledge and skill. It was... They were to be in this training, was it 3 years? I went blank, I think that's right. I think they were in training for 3 or 3.5 years. Anyway, it equates to about a high school education, that they were under this period of training for these number of years, and they learned knowledge and literature and all the things about this Babylonian life so that they could serve in the temple. And at the end of that training period, God had blessed them so that they surpassed all of the others, particularly Daniel, surpassed all of the others that were in this training program. And they successfully then advanced beyond most. And as a result, they got positions of distinction and honor. In chapter 2, the story jumps to Nebuchadnezzar's dream. And in chapter 2, Daniel is called upon to interpret the dream. That's the dream with the image, with the gold head and the silver and the various metals that would suggest what would happen in the empires over the coming years. And because Daniel could not only interpret the dream, but could also tell the king what the dream was, without finding out from the king himself, God's power was illustrated in Daniel, and as a result, he was elevated to a position of a high prominence in the kingdom. And he would continue serving the king in that very special capacity. In chapter 3 is the story of the fiery furnace. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, along with all the other Babylonians, were called upon to bow down before this other image that the king set up to be worshipped for the special festival. And because they refused, they were threatened to be put in the fiery furnace. They were given a second chance because of who they were, and the king didn't want really to kill them. But even so, they said, no, we will not bow down to your image. And the king reluctantly commanded that they be destroyed in the fiery furnace. And they were delivered again. They were delivered by the power of God. And as a result, this time, the king declared that no one would ever speak against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. No one would speak against the God of Daniel because he truly is the God who has all power and the power even to deliver them from the fiery furnace. And so the impact of their lives is felt in the kingdom. Their influence is being manifest, and it's clear that their strong stand for right and truth is working for good. The next story in the book is when Nebuchadnezzar has another dream, and in this dream he is being told that the kingdom will be taken from him, that he will be mad, crazy for a period of time, will go about the forest and the woods and will be eating, crawling on all fours and eating grass and would be like a madman. And Daniel then is going to interpret this dream. Now, how do you think Daniel feels about telling the king, well, the message from God this time is not about your kingdom and your power, but about you being brought low and humiliated. And Daniel gives an accurate telling of what that dream meant and what the message from God was. And Nebuchadnezzar, in fact, was brought down. Ultimately, he was restored to the throne for a while. But we see Nebuchadnezzar receives this honest and straightforward presentation from Daniel. In chapter 5, generations have passed. In chapter 5, there's a new king on the throne in Babylon, Belshazzar. And this king does not know Daniel like Nebuchadnezzar knew Daniel. But at this time, Belshazzar is celebrating and there's a great feast. And this is the story where Belshazzar is celebrating and he calls for the implements to come from that have come from the temple of the Israelites. And bring them these vessels, and I want to eat and drink from these vessels from the Hebrew temple. And God brings a judgment against Belshazzar and the Babylonian nation. And he brings the message in the form of a hand that writes on the wall. We talk about, in our everyday expression, you know, the handwriting's on the wall. The power and the influence of God in the world is infinite. The influence is there in so many ways, in so many phrases, even our English language. The handwriting on the wall, and that suggests bad news, doesn't it? The handwriting on the wall means bad news is coming. And that's what happens here. And God writes on the wall, and it's making Belshazzar crazy because he doesn't know what he wants to know what the message is. Somebody says, I think I know somebody, Daniel. If you call Daniel, I think he can tell you what the message is. And near the end of chapter 5, Daniel gives the interpretation in verse 26. God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. You have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Now, what would have been the attitude of Daniel in giving this message again to the king? He's not going to want to hear this. This is not good news. But he tells the king exactly what the message is. And that night in verse 30, Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, was slain, and Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. And so in chapter 6, we've got a new empire. The Medes and the Persians are now in control, and they have conquered Babylon and the city of Babylon. And a new organization comes into being. And it's interesting that in verse 1, that Darius set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom and over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might have given account. The satraps might give account to them so that the king would suffer no loss. And verse 3, Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and the satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. It's amazing that Daniel is still, now after all of these years, he's still in such a position of prominence and power. Well, when the king was going to elevate him from one of the three top men to the top man, of course that created some problems. And verse 4 tells us that the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or any fault because he was faithful. Nor was there any error or fault found in him. And so, verse 5 and following, we shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God. So these governors and satraps thronged before the king and said thus to him, King Darius, live forever. All the governors of the kingdom, of course that wasn't true, was it? It was just two of the governors out of the three. But all the governors of the kingdom and the administrators and satraps and counselors and advisors had consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which does not alter. Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree. This is a great day of honor, and he appreciates what they're doing. He's overwhelmed by this flattery because they come and want to honor the king. Do they want to honor the king? Is that what is motivating this action? They want to get rid of Daniel. And so, is this a solid chocolate bunny? Or is this a Mercury that's got a cracked exhaust manifold and a good bit of Bondo in the rear fenders? This is not, they are not what they appear to be here. And all of this pretense of honoring the king is just a cover for their real intention to bring Daniel down. Well, in verse 10, now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since his early days. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. And they went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree. Have you not signed this decree? You can hear them dripping with flattery and this sense of surprise. I can't believe what's happening here. Didn't you sign a law? Oh no, woe is me. Daniel, as they go on to say, Daniel in verse 13. Now they call him not one of the governors, they call him one of the captives. You see that in verse 13? One of the captives from Judah. You hear the prejudice and the resentment as they've demoted him already. He's one of the slaves that came from Judah way back when the Babylonians took over that land of the Hebrews. He does not show regard for you, O king, or for the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. Well, the king was displeased when he heard these words. Not displeased at Daniel. He was displeased at himself. And spent the rest of the day trying to find a way, a means by which he could circumvent his own law so that Daniel would not be put in the lion's den. But they put the pressure on, and by the end of the day they say, King, you know what you signed. You've got to do it. And with a great deal of regret, he throws him into the den of lions. The king says in verse 16, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. Was that a statement of faith or of hope and wishful thinking? Probably some of both. He wanted to believe that anyway. And certainly he was hoping that would be the case. And so Daniel was put in the lion's den. It's really a great story. And as we look at it, you might notice, you know, where Daniel is at this time. You know, here's Jerusalem and the land where Daniel was as a boy, taken as a young boy by the Babylonians to Babylon. And the Persians over in this realm have taken all of Babylon now. And and since they've got the city of Babylon, Daniel's still a long way from home. There's been no temple for him to visit. There's been no occasion for him to be reading the law these years. There's been no occasion for him to spend time with his parents or with the priests. He's by himself, separated from all of that. Now there would be other Israelites evidently who were serving in the king's palace, but how much Hebrew tradition would be going on there? How much Hebrew language would be spoken? How much discussion of the promises of God would go on in those public places in that service? He was a long way from home. We worry about our children when they go away to college, what's going to happen to them there. And we need to be. But we need to understand that there are no excuses. It doesn't matter where you go. It doesn't matter where you live and what your environment pushes on you. We've got to be people of spiritual integrity. And we've got to stand. Daniel is a great example for us in that regard. But let's talk about Daniel in the idea of integrity. And When he was put into this position of prominence under Darius, he was at the point of being promoted really to the top position in the kingdom. And as such, he had to show a great deal of integrity. When he was being put under their evil plan, we saw conduct that was not fair. He was dealing with unscrupulous, mean, wicked people that were taking advantage of his goodness, his righteousness, his consistent faith in God. And what he was trapped by was his own spiritual integrity, wasn't it? Isn't that how they got him? Didn't they say, we cannot find fault, we cannot bring any accusation against him with regard to his service in the kingdom? If we find any accusation, it's going to have to be because of his allegiance to his God. And so Daniel is a man of integrity, and he was brought down because, why? Everybody knew exactly what Daniel would do. That's why this plan worked, right? So how can we get Daniel? We'll make a decree that nobody can pray to any man or God for 30 days except to the king. This goes back to this concept that the king or the Pharaoh or the leader, the emperor, was somehow a deity. And there was that connection in much of the pagan world. Nobody can pray to man or God except to the king, Darius. And Darius went along with that. But they knew what Daniel would do, didn't they? And how did they know what Daniel would do? Because they knew Daniel. Daniel would always do what Daniel does. It doesn't make any difference. Integrity is always going to do what's right, regardless. Is that you? It doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter the circumstances. You're going to do what's right, regardless of the circumstances. Integrity is consistent. Isn't that an important part of Daniel's life? For those 30 days, he's going to pray just like he always did. I wonder sometimes, Daniel, why did you have to open the window? For 30 days, couldn't you pray but leave the window closed? Integrity will not hide or not try to deceive. Daniel did not want to leave the impression that he was going to not pray for 30 days. Daniel was going to do what he always did. The rest of the world has to do whatever it thinks it has to do. Well, I have to do what's right. Now that's a definition of spiritual integrity. The question that we need to ask ourselves is that people who know us and who have known us over time, do they know what we will do, how we will react, what we will say in any given number of difficult circumstances and situations? Or do they wonder what we'll do? They knew what Daniel would do, didn't they? People need to know what we're going to do. Not because we've told them what we will do, but because they've seen in a consistent life that we always do what is right, regardless. Bad situations, bad people, did not excuse Daniel from his principles of righteousness. What happened to him was not fair, was it? It wasn't fair from beginning to end. The whole story is disgusting. The character of these men, despicable. They cheated him. They trapped him. He was a good leader. You know he treated them fairly. He would not take unfair advantage. You know that he would not be in a position to belittle or degrade them in any sense. They would not be his enemy. He was a man of integrity, of goodness and righteousness. But their conduct was despicable. So this was an impossible situation. The king says if you pray, you're going to be thrown in the lion's den. And so Daniel didn't have a choice, did he? Don't we say that sometimes? I didn't have a choice. And when we say that, when we make the statement, I didn't have a choice, what is our implication? I had to do the bad thing. I had to fail this time. I didn't have a choice. I couldn't do what really I should have done this time because I didn't have a choice. No, Daniel was the one that didn't have a choice. He had to pray. Daniel did not have a choice because he was a man of integrity. He was solid. There was no flaw. There was no crack. What you saw on the outside, he was a righteous man through and through. He loved God above everything else. He trusted God above everything else. He was committed to God above everything else. So the world, the empires can come and go, Babylonian, go back to the days when I lived in Jerusalem. Now I'm in a Persian empire. The kings come and go. My fellow workers in the palace, they change with every administration, new people. What about Daniel? There's just no change. Because he didn't have a choice. He has to do what he has to do. And he has to do right. He was all alone. You know, we've got our excuses, and sometimes the excuse is, I'm all alone. And Daniel was all alone this time. All by himself. Even the king failed him. He must have had a good relationship with the king if the king was going to give him the number one spot, solo, by himself, be in charge of everything. The king trusted him. Must have known him like a friend. He would always be a subject. But the reaction of the king when he put him in the lion's den, and the reaction of the king as he waited all night wondering what would happen to Daniel, and you look at the reaction of the king when Daniel was brought out of the lion's den alive. There was a close relationship between the king and Daniel, and the king disappointed Daniel this time, didn't he? It's no excuse, because it doesn't matter what other people do. It doesn't even matter what people who I thought were my friends and my allies. It doesn't matter what they do, because I'm following the Lord. That's spiritual integrity. But the interesting thing about integrity is it's not in one great act of heroism. The story of Daniel and this lion's den, that's a great moment in Daniel's life. But that does not define integrity. It's easy to be, or at least it's easier, to be a hero in one great act of sacrifice, in one moment where we muster our strength, we stir up our emotions, and we're rallied to some great battle. Well, where there may be honor, there may be recognition, or there's this call for some strong action, and we see that need, and we step up and we do the right thing. I'll tell you what's much more difficult, and that is to be that same character when there are no opportunities for great heroism. It's just a matter of every day doing the same old service to God, faithful, righteous, holy, honest, consistently, all the way through life. Integrity is a life commitment. Remember, we started in chapter 1, the story of Daniel. And I wanted to do that so we could see the whole picture. He started out probably somewhere between the ages of 12 and 18 or 20. Because you add the 70 or so years that he was in captivity, if he was 12, that would make him 82. Right? How old is Daniel when he was thrown in the lion's den? Well, he's at least in his 80s. At least in his 80s. He may be in his 90s. We don't really know that. But the history, as you look at the reign of the kings and ultimately the 70-year in captivity when Cyrus is going to send them back, 70 years, Daniel has been in captivity for that long. And he started out as this young boy who said, I won't eat what the king's given me to eat. You just give us our regular diet. You just let us eat the vegetables and drink the water and see what happens. What kind of power does a 12 or 14 or 16 or 18-year-old have in his heart, in his commitment to stand up in that kind of a circumstance and situation? He's a slave in a foreign country. There's nobody standing with him. Well, he did have three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But they looked at each other with fear in their eyes more than once, no doubt. That's when it started. But what we do and who we are is determined by what we do every day. That's who we are. It started when he said, I will not eat of the king's table. But then it was challenged when he was called upon to interpret the dreams, and he would give honor to God and say, the Lord will tell the king the dream. And then the dreams began to bring bad news, and he would stand before the king and say, you know, you're going to lose the throne. He'd stand before another king that doesn't really even know him and said, well, tonight you're going to die. What's a prophet to do in that situation? A prophet of integrity says what the Lord says to say, tells the truth, stands up. Integrity takes time and habit. We can do good deeds now and again. Once in a while, we can stand up and do the right thing and make a good showing once in a while. That's not spiritual integrity. It's every time, every day, no matter who's looking. If nobody's looking, if I'm all alone, I'm in enemy territory, there is no way out of an impossible situation. And every day, every time, I do the right thing. I don't mean to say that Daniel never committed a sin. I don't know what it is. I haven't noticed any mention of his sin. But without a doubt, like everybody else, Daniel failed God and committed sin. But as we would look at, as his neighbors would look at him, they would see a man of integrity, this consistent service day in and day out. Remember, I know what Daniel will do when the law of the king says don't pray. He's going to pray. How did they know that? And so let's not wait for a great moment to shine, but it's every day. Let's be the kind of person that we ought to be. That's spiritual integrity. And integrity, spiritual integrity, is fundamental to the law of Christ. What's more fundamental in the teaching of Christ than the Sermon on the Mount? He starts out with the Beatitudes. Blessed are, who's blessed? The meek, the hungering and thirsting after righteousness, the merciful. What the Lord is talking about is not specific acts of service there, is he? He's talking about your character. What are you in your heart? Are you meek? Do you long for righteousness? Are you willing to stand in the face of persecution? And then Jesus talks about, you're the salt of the earth and the light of the world. You're going to be an example to other people. You're a leader. You're not a follower spiritually. You're going to stand out from and therefore influence and lead the people around you. That's integrity and strength and power. Your righteousness has got to exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees. In the day that Jesus made that statement, everybody would have said, nobody's as righteous as the scribes and the Pharisees. I mean, they are righteous. And Jesus says, they're not righteous, they're hypocrites. And if you're going to be accepted to God, you're going to have to do better than them. And that would kind of been a shocking statement. You can't be better than the scribes and the Pharisees. You've got to really keep the law. Not a show of keeping the law. Not this hypocrisy. A look that's pious and an appearance of spirituality. Jesus says, I want you to really do and live according to the will of God. Jesus said, you've got to control the conduct, amen, but you've got to control the heart. The law says don't kill, don't even be angry. The law says don't commit adultery, don't even lust for another person. The law says don't break your oaths when you make an oath. Jesus says you don't even need an oath. You tell the truth and you cannot make your word any more secure by an oath, because you're a man of integrity to begin with. People like to give alms and pray and fast so that other people will see how righteous they are, how good they are. Jesus says you could care less what other people think about your service to God, because you're serving the Lord. You're just as happy serving in secret when no man knows, when no man can praise the good deeds that are done. That's the service Jesus is looking for. That's integrity. That's a bunny that's got chocolate on the inside that is much more significant than just the appearance of chocolate on the outside. And Jesus says, it's not the ones who say, Lord, Lord, that'll enter the kingdom of heaven. The one that does the will of the Father, which is in heaven. Isn't the religion of Jesus Christ is about spiritual integrity, isn't it? It's not about a show. It's not about looking good. It's not about what people think. It's not about making a big splash on special occasions. It's about being through and through devoted to the Lord, no matter what comes, no matter what day it is, no matter who's watching. I'm always going to be and do what I ought to be. I want to encourage you to realize that you need to put your name there. We had to start with Daniel, integrity. It's the principle of the thing. What's your name? You need to put it right there. What separates you from Daniel? A lot of history? A different time and place? There's a lot of differences. But when you're looking from God's perspective, there should not be any difference in you, me, and Daniel himself. I want to encourage you to make a commitment to be on the inside what the Lord wants you to show on the outside. Submit to Jesus Christ in obedience to the gospel. The Bible talks about obeying from the heart that form of doctrine to which we were delivered. It's in a text that talks about being baptized. If you love the Lord, you're going to want to do what He says. And I encourage you to confess your faith in Christ and be baptized for the remission of sins. And you might even come to the front as we stand together and sing.